And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle.
It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.
I can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody!
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it, Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Nerd to the Third Power, your one-stop shop for all things nerdy and awesome. I am your host and master of ceremonies, Dr. Gonzo. With me, as always, in this epic quest of awesomeness is our resident anime goddess, the Cat. Cat, how are you doing this week? You just look so exhausted.
I am. I'm still recovering from COD, but also the allergies here. Guys, allergies are terrible. it's really bad here right now.
Everything's yellow from the pollen.
Technology Truths, brought to you by Geico.
Technology Truths.
Truth. Teenagers can communicate entirely in emojis.
How was the birthday party? Pizza slice, kitten, soccer ball, pineapple?
Truth. It's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at geico.com.
What are you talking about? Paperclip, shoulder shrug, high five, wizard hat? What?
Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
My car should not be the color that it is.
Okay. Yeah, we're getting a lot of that over where I'm at now. And because I live out on the water, I also get river flies. Like, every time I open my door, it's just like a swarm of them just coming. It's like a plague of locusts.
Yeah, we've got that, but with mosquitoes right now, like, because it's just been nonstop rain, everything's like pools of water everywhere. So it's definitely a plague here.
Yeah, okay. And also with us is our token European, Skyblaze. How are you doing this week?
I'm pretty good. I have been to Alton Towers theme park. I may or may not be getting a DJ gig at a esports bar, so that's cool.
Nice. So a lot of good stuff going on your side of things. Birdman, how are you doing this week?
I'm not wearing any pants, and you can't make me. Ha ha!
Good to know.
OSHA would disagree, but we'll discuss that with HR after recording. But yes, we got a fun show for you tonight. This is a subject that we've all been really looking forward to for a very long time, and it's kind of a question of why it took us so long to get to this this topic. We're discussing Dungeons and Dragons. This is something that Mike and Skyblaze and Kat have been really chomping at the bit to discuss. And, you know, I know basically nothing about Dungeons & Dragons, so it's basically going to be their show, and because it's such a broad topic, we're going to give them the whole hour. So let's just jump right into it. So, Kat, I guess my first question to you is how did you get involved in Dungeons & Dragons?
I didn't play as a kid or even, like, as a young person. My dad was huge into Dungeons & Dragons since, you know, the first release. He used to play back when my family was stationed in Japan. So when I was first born, he was playing Dungeons and Dragons. One of his sisters would write letters to him telling him that the devil was in the game. And he would say, I'm in Japan, Buddha will protect me. this is a real story. And so my dad has always been this tremendous nerd. And when I was in high school, my dad had a group of people from his work who he worked at NSA at the time. So it was him and all of his NSA buddies with my brother and one of my brother's friends all playing Dungeons and Dragons in our basement every other Friday night, ordering pizza. They had like terrain and maps and you know, minis and everything. And this was like in the early 2000s before it got the resurgence that it has now. And I was very, very jealous, but I was too scared to actually play because it was a bunch of grown men and I'd be the only girl there. It's super awkward. So eventually, by the time I was in college, I had some friends who wanted to play, and we found somebody who could DM for us, and we were playing, and I had no idea what I was doing, and I was terrible at it, but it was really fun. And it took a long time for me to get back into it. Because I had been wanting to get back into it for like a good solid decade. Like, not gonna lie, like a solid decade. I've been wanting to get back in. And then just within like the last year and a half, I found groups who were playing, who could play regularly. And it's just been a lot of fun ever since. Well, one of my games is fun. One of my games is way fun.
Okay. And Skyblaze, you've actually been involved in Dungeons & Dragons for quite a while. So what drew you to the game?
Well, I've been a fan of sword and sorcery and fantasy books since I was a fairly young teenager. And my grandfather actually bought me the AD&D like, starter set when I was, I don't know, 14, 13. I had no idea what it was. I kind of, this is before the internet was widely available in the UK, so I was trying to figure out what it was. It wasn't until I got to university that I actually really picked it up, though. So we're talking kind of 2002, 2003-ish. Oh gosh, that was a long time ago now. Let's try not to think about that too hard.
those ancient and heady days of yore.
Don't. I'm 36 next month. I joined a society at the University of Sheffield called NODSOC, which stands for Not Only Dungeons and Dragons Society.
Okay.
Despite the name, they do play some Dungeons and Dragons. They also play a whole bunch of other stuff. World of Darkness, Dark Heresy, Marvel
I'd
Universe.
Play that.
Yeah, Dark Heresy is kind of fun. You have to kind of treat it gently though, because the system can be horrendously broken if you're not careful.
Yes, I actually played Dark Heresy and. One of the and we also played a spinoff game called Death Watch, and I remember reading a story on a board of how a space marine managed to kill himself trying to walk down a flight of stairs.
Yep. but I ended up in a game that was being run by, well, he's no longer a friend, but a guy who was a friend at the time, who persuaded me to play a shifter barbarian. So, would occasionally just rock up and turn into a bear. Because it was a nice, simple class to play. You know, it's a barbarian, you hit things with a sword. Job done.
And now, if I recall, Dungeons & Dragons was also sort of related to a major milestone in your life.
Yes, it was. Well, not D&D specifically, but role-playing, tabletop role-playing. I was GMing for a role-playing session when I was just about setting up for it when Tony proposed to me.
I think the joke that you told us when it happened was talk about bribing the GM.
That was a friend of mine who made that joke. Who was like, I got nothing. It was very hard to concentrate that session. I wonder why.
All right. And Birdman, you've also been pretty heavily involved in D&D and tabletop gaming through your show Terrible Warriors.
My own history with Dungeons and Dragons goes all the way back to the year 1992. CNC Music Factory was still hot, parachute pants were a thing, and Crystal Pepsi could still occasionally be found. That's the era that I come from. So my friend Jamie Decker at the time had all these weird books and other had all these really cool fantasy illustrations on them, didn't know what the hell it was. And he started talking about D&D and describing it to me. I'm thinking, all right, that sounds pretty weird. I'm not really into the whole sword and sorcery thing, but I started reading a book called Dragonflight by Anne McCaffrey at the time, and I loved it. I'm thinking, all right, well, maybe he can do something like that for me. He didn't. My first adventure was I was a cleric, and I hated being a cleric because I couldn't use edged weapons in his mind. So all I had was this big fuck you mace, and my mission was to go destroy an orc base because reasons. And I didn't pick up D&D for quite some time after that. I'd played a smattering here and there. I'd learned what Thaco was and immediately forgot. So this is AD&D, so this would be about, once again, about 1992, 93. Mm. And I really started getting into role-playing games, more specifically with the Star Wars role-playing game, which I'll talk a little bit about later in the episode. But it wasn't until D&D came into its third edition in the early 2000s that I really came back with a vengeance. I had a group of me and my friends. I was living on my own at the time. My fiance at the time had just left me, so I had a fuck ton of free time. So I remember playing with my friends Brad, John, Ben, and whoever else we could rope in the sessions, and we'd had just a fantastic time playing through third ed. I remember there being a ridiculous amount of support for third edition D&D. It's still supported to this very day through DriveThruRPG and other places like that.
Yeah, they open gaming license.
Exactly, yeah. So a lot of people were supporting it. And then I fell out of D&D for a number of years when I went to college. When I went to grad school in 2009, Wizards of the Coast contacted me, and they were pushing 4th edition at the time, a.k.a. Dungeons & Dragons, the war minigame. So they sent me a bunch of books for it, and I was like, okay, cool, I'll check this out. And me and my friends played a couple sessions of that. I was a dragonborn barbarian who liked to eat cow shit for some reason. And I remember I'm floating
on
a raft.
You really bungled that personal quirks role, didn't you?
Oh, my DM was a dickhead. I love you, Lorenzo, but goddamn you. So I'm in a raft in the Underdark, just going through. I don't know what ever happened to that character. But then Terrible Warriors came around 2012 when I was at a convention with Linkara, Spoonie, another guy in the community known as Big Mike from the formerly of the 404's improv group up here in Canada. And we played this session at a convention called Con Bravo. And then we started role-playing. I was, once again, big dumb barbarian, but I had a lot of fun with it. And we fought this black dragon, and I kind of got the inclination, like, you know, maybe I should stick with like D&D. What if we made a podcast out of it? And now here we are, X amount of years later. I'm no longer an executive on the show. I'm just a DM. I just don't have time to do it anymore. But my person who came up behind me was a guy named Justin Eacock. Really got me interested in more D&D like systems. There's a game he likes called Forbidden Lands, which is really, really, really cool. And I started playing more D&D with that group. I ran my own separate side gig called the Cambridge Chronicles, where it was me, my friends Lee, Tristan, and Alex. And we ran through a version of Faerun. Faerun is set in the Forgotten Realms, which I think is a world created by Ed Greenwood, I want to say is the author's name. And we tried to save the world from a dark goddess, and it got ridiculous and bad because my entire party got TPK'd by an orc barbarian who got incredibly lucky and rolled 2 natural 20s and decapitated one of the motherfuckers, because you can't argue with the dice gods. Sure, you could say the DM holds the final sway, but sometimes them bones roll the way they roll, and you just gotta go with it.
All right. Well, as for my experiences with Dungeons & Dragons, like, I actually have very little with the actual tabletop game itself, but I have played several video games based on Dungeons & Dragons, and I'll discuss that when we start talking about D&D and other media.
So, but we'll get into that down the line. One of the things that I found really interesting about Dungeons and Dragons in recent years is it's never really gone away as a property. It's always been kind of an ever-present pillar of geek culture. But over the last couple of years, I want to say since like the mid-2010s, it seems to have had kind of a second renaissance. It's kind of exploded in popularity. And I kind of want to ask, you know, what do you think is kind of the leading factor in this second renaissance of Dungeons and Dragons?
I think seeing it in popular culture has definitely given it the kick in the pants it needed. I think having it on a show like NBC's Community really, really helped. I'm trying to think of other things that really kickstarted it. The Big Bang Theory talking about it at times too definitely helped. Web shows like Critical Role really pushed it.
There's also there's a bit of a generational thing, because the people who grew up with it and went to college with it are now of the age that they're becoming parents, or have and that are introducing it to their children. And they're therefore rediscovering their love for it. So you've got a new generation coming up, and also the older generation who are kind of dusting off their books and going, wow, I remember that I really liked it.
Okay. Kat, what about you? What do you think has contributed to this new renaissance?
I really think it's part of the shift of things that were once considered nerdy are now all mainstream. Superheroes and comic books and all kinds of stuff have moved from something that you get bullied for in school to something that makes, you know, millions of dollars in the box office. So there's just been this whole shift of suddenly things that, you know, maybe you wanted to do but you were afraid to do are now okay, you know, because, well, Batman's okay and Superman's okay and Iron Man's okay, so maybe now it's okay if you play this card game, and then if the card game's okay, then maybe it's okay if you play this tabletop game. And then also, because it's so much easier to find things now, like, almost anything can be explained by the proliferation of the internet. You know, before, you know, there was limited actual information about Dungeons and Dragons and what it is and what you can do. And let's face it, there was sort of an issue with who can afford it. Because the books got expensive. If you wanted the full experience, it's not the cheapest hobby in the world. But now there's programs online and downloadable character sheets and everything that you could possibly need to play a game, most of it is free now. And the internet has made it easier to play with people all over the world. So if you can't get a group together of your friends, then you can go find somebody online to play with you.
And kind of leaping off of that, one of the things that I think has really contributed to it is, you know, with the advent of the internet, we have more people sharing their creative works and their creative spirit. And Dungeons and Dragons, you know, as little as I know about it, I've always seen that it's a very, very easy receptacle, very open receptacle for people to, you know, kind of express their creativity in weird and unusual ways, and just to show off, you know, their kind of their hidden talents and their creativity. I mentioned a few weeks ago in Ask a Geek Question about the strange dice. My buddy Hambone, who he works at a blacksmith shop, and he made a ninja star dice for a ninja game that they were playing. And he actually does stuff like that all the time for his group. He actually, for his DM's birthday one year, he made a wizard staff
that he
presented to him.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. But it's like you just about any time that I go exploring the rabbit hole of Dungeons and Dragons, I always come away with some weird thing that I'm like, you know, God, I never imagined, you know, someone actually, they're doing things that I would never even imagine. Like, you know, one group that I saw that, you know, they played a steampunk game, and instead of using dice, they had this gear-driven spinner that they'd press a button and it would, you know, a bunch of gears would spin and, you know, it would come up with a random number. And I just thought that was just so totally cool that someone had actually, like, built this in a metal shop somewhere.
There's a game system that uses Jenga.
Yep. Oh, really?
Red. Yep. It's
seriously.
Tower of Terror.
It's actually brilliant. It's actually really well made.
I'm going to have to look that up because I don't want to see it. I have to see it. I cannot achieve lasting happiness until I've witnessed this thing.
I wish I could remember what it's called. It's been... Yeah.
But I've played it. It's great.
It's brilliant.
But putting a train back on the tracks, you know, Dungeons & Dragons is something that, like, it gives people basically a blank canvas to draw on and to do whatever they want. And it's one of those things where it's like, yes, there are rules and there are established worlds that you can play, but at the same time, you can go off and do your own thing and create something whole cloth if you want. And go ahead.
I was about to say, yeah, totally, because one of the things about D&D that honestly scared me for a really long time, actually kept me from playing D&D for a number of years, was the libraries of Congress, essentially, of established lore. There's worlds for Eberron, Greyhawk, Planescape, Spelljammer, Ravenloft, Dark Sun, all these worlds with huge, all this lore. But like you said, if you don't want to do that, you can create a generic whole cloth fantasy world of your own and incorporate elements from... Hell, if you want to put Strahd von Zarevich into Dark Sun, I'm sure you could. I'm sure somebody has. You could do weird shit like that, and that's kind of one of the things I've come away recently, because when I started the Cambridge Chronicles for Terrible Warriors, I really wanted to set it in an established D&D world that I didn't know a lot about. I've never read the Dragons of Autumn's Twilight, which I think is the dragon, which is the D&D
Dragonlance.
Dragonlance book series. I've never read those. I know very little. I've only read the fluff from the core books and the asshole on the motorcycle. Fuck him. Anyway, moving along. It's one of those things where I've always wanted to create something more interesting. And like you said there, having the ability to just draw from wherever you want, express that creativity. Because often for years, I actually said this on Twig for a number of years, I'm not a very creative person. It wasn't until the last couple years where I started doing Terrible Warriors more full-time with different role-playing systems, different worlds. Maybe I am creative. I've been afraid by the lore to express that. And now that I've kind of broken that mental chain, I don't need to be beholden to it, because who's going to get me? Fucking Gary Gygax from his grave? No, he's not going to rise up and kill me. So I can do whatever the hell I want. And that is so liberating.
He'd probably, if he saw what you're doing, he'd probably give you double guns and go, you go, buddy.
It's also the perception of what D&D is has undergone a bit of a shift. Because the perception used to be, you know, it was teenagers, kids, so usually in a damp basement somewhere, playing very, very stereotypical, generic Tolkien fantasy, where, you know, the rules were holy writ passed down from upon high, and you would die because of an errant dice roll. The perception has now shifted to it being this collaborative storytelling thing that, you know, you a group of people get together and you create a story and a world and an adventure together. I think the web shows like Critical Role probably have quite a lot to do with that shifting of perception. But also the fact that previously, in any given town or city, usually only had one, maybe two groups of role players. And if there was like a few people in that group who were not very nice people, then you couldn't really play.
Yeah, because trying to find a group of people can be one of the most frustrating challenges of wanting to play this hobby. I mean, it used to be you'd go down to your local game store, and occasionally there might be a post on a bulletin board that says LFG, or AKA looking for group, to borrow the kind of WoW term.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'd find some nice people, sometimes you wouldn't. Or you'd run into the LARPers, and they're a whole new group of fun right there. And I got a D&D story for that if you really want to hear it.
LARPs are very different beasts to tabletop.
Yes, they are. And my D&D LARP story ends with me screaming at 3 a.m.
Like many of your stories do.
Yeah, exactly. And ultimately, with no pants, I might add. So anyway, moving right along. But yeah, I mean, finding people in this hobby, now it's easier. You've got places like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Reddit is a wonderful resource.
There's a lot of Discord groups. There's also sites like Roll20, which will help you, not only help you set up a group and have like maps that lots of people can see no matter where in the world they are, but you also helps you find a suitable role-playing group.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. This hobby, as it's become more accessible, people are willing to teach. Like you said, that's it's our parents are now in positions of power, and they want to pass down the hobby they had during the 80s and 90s down to us. That's really kind of cool, and especially the people now, they're in positions of power to make the game cool. And hell, there's a Stranger Things edition of D&D that got released last month.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
All right.
Yeah, that's really friggin' neat. Actually, this past weekend was D&D Live in Los Angeles. The Descent, I think it was called. The Descent of Avaris or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm catching up on the footage from it.
And they released a new the big announcement. There's going to be a hardcover edition of Eberron. Not my favorite D&D setting. I was hoping for Dark Sun, but I'll take what I get because it's kind of steampunky. So why not?
All right. Kat, what about you? Anything to add?
I was going to say that I think another reason why it's become so popular lately is that a lot of people use it not just as a creative outlet, but like a therapeutic outlet.
That's a good point.
We're
more
aware than we've ever been about mental illnesses or, you know, what our personality flaws are or what our mental flaws might be. You know, some people just don't function the same way other people do, and they need a safe outlet for their thoughts and feelings and emotions. And so a lot of people have, I think, turned to Dungeons & Dragons and use it as a way to get it out of their system, like get the things in your head out.
You know, I actually got a perfect example of that, and that's my buddy Hambone. Earlier, he has and I got his clearance to talk about this before we got into this, before, you know, people think I'm telling something I shouldn't. I got his permission to tell this, but he has very severe ADHD, and he's very heavily medicated, and when his medication wears off, he enters a state that we call Hambone after hours. It's almost like he becomes a completely different person, but he's able to find an area of calm in Dungeons and Dragons where he can take that extra energy that being hyperactive just naturally gives you and channel it into something. And, you know, it's done him a lot of good. And he's said that, like, you know, look, if it wasn't for you know, my D&D group, you know, I don't know where I'd be. So, you know, I've definitely seen firsthand how Dungeons and Dragons can be a kind of mental health release for people.
There's a meme or a story that's being shared around on social media. I can't remember all the specific details to it, but it boils down to this. This girl really wanted to play D&D, and she was talking with her dungeon master. And she's like, I don't speak really good English, but I really still want to play with you. And he's like, okay, well, what do you speak? And she says, I speak Spanish. And he's like, okay, cool, I also speak Spanish. So can my character use Spanish instead of Elvish? To basically kind of say, well, just say Spanish is Elvish for the sake of this, right? And he's like, okay, sure. So he'd hold entire conversations with her sitting at the table. So while he and her were conversing in Spanish, aka Elvish, she was learning English along the way with the other players. And over the course of like a year, she became a full English speaker or something along those lines. But it came out that she said, because of my dungeon master willing to work with me, I felt more comfortable. I learned another language and you let me be me at that table. I didn't have to be shy. I didn't have to be afraid. And that's some of the transformative experiences that D&D can have with you. They can bring you out of your shell if you're shy, if you're willing to take on a role or if you're just willing to try something a little bit different out of your comfort zone, sometimes that'll bring you something immensely rewarding.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay. All right. So I guess one of the things that we have to examine, since we're talking about D&D, is sort of how it's influenced not just, you know, itself, but also other areas of geek media. And I mentioned previously that I had played, you know, Dungeons & Dragons video games. And there have actually been many games based on D&D systems and lores. My particular favorite is the old school BioWare RPG Baldur's Gate, which introduced me to one of my absolute favorite characters of all time, Minsk the ranger, and Boo.
How did I know you were going to say that? I just knew.
And his pet miniature giant space hamster Boo.
Eyes, Boo.
Minsk will lead with blade and boot. Boo will take care of the details. And I was enthralled by the writing in that game and how developed the world was. And then, of course, you know, Dungeons & Dragons has inspired other game systems like GURPS, which for you Fallout fans, the original Fallout was originally supposed to be mechanically based on the GURPS system. And then, of course, you know, if we're going to talk about it inspired the D20 system, which if we're going to talk about that, I've got a name drop. What I consider to be not just one of the finest Star Wars games ever made, but one of the finest games, period. And that's the original Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, which mechanically was based straight off of the D20 system.
Yep. It was based off the Star Wars D20 game.
Yeah. And
there's also the fact that you can pretty much trace a direct lineage from Elder Scrolls Skyrim straight back to AD&D.
And then there are games that even if they're not based off mechanics, they have taken inspiration from that style of game. Like one of the things that drew me to the original Dark Souls was a friend of mine saying that if you want to have an idea of what it was like to play first edition Dungeons and Dragons, play Dark Souls, and you've got an idea of what it's like. And you know, it very much is kind of a send up of first edition Dungeons and Dragons, where you're just in the middle of this random dungeon with this oppressive atmosphere, and it's just you against all the monsters and traps.
See, also the original Diablo.
Yeah. And Diablo 2, mm-hmm. which again is one of my favorite games of all time. So I guess the next question I want to ask is, what are some ways that you've seen Dungeons and Dragons influence other areas of the geek sphere? So Kat, let's start with you.
I would say the most noticeable thing I can think of is that every time I watch an American cartoon, there's a Dungeons & Dragons episode.
There was one just recently. The new She-Ra had one in.
Yeah, She-Ra had one. Voltron's had one. I'm sure other shows have had them now.
My Little Ponies had one.
Gravity Falls had one.
And part of it is, like, some of the creators are involved with stuff like Critical Role. There's a bit of overlap there. But, like, everybody's doing one now because it's fun and a lot of people can relate to it. And you're guaranteed to get viewers if you do it. So, like, that's, like, the most immediate thing I could think of is, oh, shit, yeah, this is a thing now. But I think there's a general acceptance now of fantasy in general. So, you know, we had Lord of the Rings kind of kick it off, and Game of Thrones has been holding it steady. And so I think there's like a resurgence of fantasy films and TV shows coming in. And it's not all just Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones, you know, the legacy there. I think there's a lot of D&D to thank because we have a broader definition of fantasy now, thanks to stuff like D&D, because D&D is so malleable. So now there's so much that can be done, and I think we're going to see an increase in, you know, TV shows and movies that are fantasy based because we continually will consume it and integrate it into our own games and all kinds of stuff. There's a lot of intermingling there, I think.
Okay. Skyblaze?
I happen to know for a fact that Terry Pratchett's Discworld was based on a D&D campaign that Terry Pratchett was involved in. I also know for a fact that the luggage was based on a magical item that was supposed to be basically a walking chest that would carry your stuff, so you didn't have to carry it about your person and use the what is it? Or something. They found this thing and were like, excellent, we can just put our stuff in this and we don't have to spend money on a bank of holding or a haversack. However, the thing was supposed to obey verbal commands. So, you know, turn left, and it would turn left. But there was a 10% chance that it wouldn't listen. So if you were going up near a cliff, turn left, turn left, turn left, oh shit. And that's where the luggage came from. Also, George R. R. Martin was a D&D player. So,
I would not have guessed.
Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
say.
Well, shit. And apparently, what's his face? Wheel of Time.
Oh god, I know this one because I've actually read those books.
Robert Jordan.
That's him.
Yeah.
He was a D&D player, and again, you read the books, it's really bloody obvious. Terry Pratchett is one of the less obvious ones, but a lot of the kind of latter-day sword and sorcery fantasy stuff is really obviously inspired by the D&D campaign. Also, the first of the... oh god, I'm so tired, my brain isn't working. Richard Garriott's games.
Ultima, yeah.
Ultima. The first couple of those were directly inspired by this, like, incredibly drug-fueled D&D campaign that he ran in, I think it was in college.
Yeah, that answers a lot of questions, actually.
I don't know that one for definite, but I've heard several rumors from several different unrelated people that was the case. Mm. So, it seems plausible. Also, the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon.
Which was terrible. Should have been way better.
Awful.
Well, I mean, it was the 80s.
It was also apparently based on a specific supplement, which is why they all have these really weird classes.
Acrobat! Because that's fucking useful!
But apparently it was based on a specific supplement, and the reason why is because they were, whoever it was at the time, was it still TSR at that point?
Yes.
I believe so, yeah.
We're trying to push this particular supplement. But apparently it was like one of the worst supplements they'd ever done, which is why it just sank without trace.
So while we still have some time left, I kind of want to ask, because, you know, one of the things about Dungeons & Dragons that I really love is hearing all the crazy wacky Dungeons & Dragons stories. So I want to ask you guys, what is your favorite Dungeons & Dragons story that you've either been a part of or that you've seen happen? What is the craziest thing that you've witnessed happen in a game? So, Skyblaze, as a longtime DM, let's start with you.
This isn't one that a D&D story that I was actually DMing for. This is when I was a player. I was playing an elf dread necromancer, and another character who was, I think, had the part celestial template was trying to romance me, my character, and. We just had a big fight, and one of the characters had cast a telepathic bond spell on the entire party to make it easier to coordinate. Because our DM was an asshole and wouldn't allow us for talking to be a free action. So, this other character takes my character to one side and is like, look, can we have a talk? And I was like, okay. He's like, look, we've been dancing around this for ages. Can we just, like, get to the point and go somewhere and make out? And I went, no, you don't. We don't. We shouldn't do this right now. And he's like, you always do this. What the hell is wrong with you? Why are you cock blocking us? I was like, no. Because the telepathic bond spell is still active. At this point, another character who, the guy who was trying to romance me, their characters did not get on. This other character goes, yeah, that was really smooth. Well done. And he goes, you shut up. You shut up and die in a fire. And calls on the spellcaster. He's like, turn this off. At which point this voice in his head comes back and says, right, it's off. Thank you. Wait. We had to stop the session for about 10 minutes so the GM could stop laughing his ass off.
Okay. Kat, what about you? What's your favorite Dungeons & Dragons story?
Okay. So, the last leg of the campaign that I'm currently in was a, like, homebrew of Curse of Strahd. So we're in the final showdown with Strahd, and we've got this asshole on his knees. And we have a dragonborn who had used disguise self to make himself look like Strahd. So there's basically two of these guys in the room. And the dragonborn also, due to a curse that he got, has like poison skin. So his signature move was just to like touch you on the side of the face and go make a con save.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got Strahd on his knees. And our dragonborn, still disguised as Strahd, walks up to him, grabs him on the side of his face with both hands, and kisses him. Like, just like, gets a little tongue action and goes, make a con save.
Oh dear.
And it was just amazing. Like, our whole fight with Strahd was just, like, unbelievably cool. But that just really, like, took it. That just... Oh, it just made our day. Because in our, I don't know how the regular module goes, but in our version of Strahd had like killed his brother, and we at some point had seen his ghost. So I'm playing a changeling, and I'm literally disguised as his brother, carrying his brother's sword, and I like chug this potion of enlarge, basically. So the two people that Strahd is fighting are like a 12-foot-tall version of his brother who he'd killed, and himself. The visual that we created was unbelievable and really dumb. It was so good.
All right. Birdman, what about you? Favorite Dungeons & Dragons story?
Okay. This one happened on Cambridge Chronicles a little while ago, and it's a bunch of smaller moments, but I remember them because I was the DM, and I'm working with the stupidest group of adventurers you can imagine. I remember they came into port of this town, and they were looking for information, but all of them have ridiculously shitty charisma. So I have them, they find this hobgoblin who runs a bar in town. He's like a lawful neutral or something, so he's not an evil hobgoblin. But they fail their saves, and he's like, fine, I'll play you for it. And they play a game of dice or something. And I remember the hobgoblin puked in this guy's hat, and the guy's like, well, fine, I'll put on the hat. I'm like, did you not hear what I said? So he puts a hat with puke on it, on his head. And for some reason, prestidigitation came up, which makes everything cool for some reason. Another memory that comes to mind is, I can't remember what the setup was, but they had to trick a tailor to give them some magical fabric, and somehow it was tied into that fucking motorcycle. I'm sorry. Moving on. They had to get some magical thread or something, and they needed to cause a distraction to steal it. And two of my players were druids, one was a rogue. So you figure the rogue should be able to stealth in there and do this no fucking problem. No, he fucks that up. So my two druids decide to change into chickens. and they trash the tailor's store. So they're like, and they're like just tossing stuff around. There's chicken eggs and chicken shit everywhere. And everyone is freaking out and the tailor doesn't know what to do. So he's all perturbed chasing these chickens out of his store. And eventually the rogue comes in, steals the thread from these guys. And half the town is in chaos because there's all these chickens causing trouble because one of them cast a spell and summoned a swarm of chickens. So in this port town, there's this entire scene of utter fucking chaos because he chose to summon a swarm of chickens. It was fucking retarded. Oh my god, it was so ridiculous.
Okay.
I just remember, I'm just thinking of like that thing in Legend of Zelda where if you attack one of the cuckoos.
Yeah, that's basically what happened.
All right. Well, this is another Hambone story. Because for a while he was in our Dark Heresy group, and for those who aren't familiar with Dark Heresy, it's one of several games set in the Warhammer 40,000 universe, and it's had a few spinoffs. One of which was Deathwatch, which, as I mentioned previously, was about Space Marines. So Hambone was playing this Space Wolf character called Curl Ironfang, so named because in a drunken bet to prove his badassery, he ripped out his own canine teeth and replaced them with steel fangs that he had forged himself, hence the name. Well, we were playing a campaign, and I don't recall exactly how it happened, but one of Hambone's character's quirks was that in between fights, he'd always be found in the ship mess hall just gorging himself on food and drink. And the ship that we were on was boarded by chaos cultists, and a bunch of them stumbled across Iron Fang in the mess hall with this giant fucking leg of roast beef in his hands. And so we wound up the combat being with Iron Fang fighting this cultist with his battle axe in one hand and this giant leg of meat in the other that he was using as a bludgeon, and that he would stop to take bites from in between rounds to kind of replenish his HP, just using this leg of meat as a weapon. And it finally ended with the last cultist, with Hambone's character grabbing the cultist by the throat, taking the now bare, you know, the now bare bone, and shoving it lengthwise down the poor guy's throat. And the DM was like, "Wow, that is the most creative kill that I've ever seen, and you now terrify me," because he at the time the DM had not experienced Hambone after hours, and that's the kind of shit that he comes up with when his medication has worn off. So yeah, that's one of my favorite tabletop gaming stories, just because I love the image of just this giant ass space marine just beating people to death with a giant, basically a giant ham. So yeah, that's my favorite story. So I guess now let's kind of just start wrapping things up here and start talking about just our final thoughts or things that we want to talk about with Dungeons & Dragons. So Kat, are there any last miscellaneous thoughts that you want to add to this discussion?
Dungeons & Dragons, on the whole, is a lot of fun. It's one of the most, I think, difficult hobbies to have because it's so hard to coordinate people. But for all of its difficulties, it's so rewarding. Depending on, of course, how you play. I have one game where it's okay. It's fine. I have another game where it is super fun and I, you know, like, the difference is, like, what I want to get out of it is different than what the group wants to get out of it. And I like a really heavy role-playing game rather than, like, combat heavy. I like a lot of character exploration, writing. Like, for me, it's about, like, creative writing and then a little bit of improv and acting. But, you know, that's not what everybody wants to going to take something different away from it. And it's sort of like cosplay. Whatever you want to get out of it, as long as you're having fun, then that's what's important. So I think that's like the most important thing, is that, you know, to say no to gatekeepers, to no to anybody who wants to tell you how you should play and if you're allowed to play. As long as you are doing what you want and having fun and everybody is having fun, then you're playing it right.
All right. Skyblaze, what about you? Any last miscellaneous thoughts?
I mostly agree with Kat. But also with what Mike was saying earlier, there's so much creativity that you can do with D&D. In the first campaign of D&D I played, between myself and the GM and a couple of other players, we pretty much created an entire culture and events and way of being for the shifters, because the supplement for them wasn't out yet. So we just made it up between us. And doing that collaboratively is incredibly satisfying. And you can have some incredibly emotional moments when you are with the right group and the right DM at the right time.
Okay. And Birdman, what about you? Final miscellaneous thoughts.
Piggybacking on what these guys have said, absolutely, there is no right way to play. There is only the only right way to play is that you're having fun and everybody at the table is comfortable with the story that you're telling. Communication between you and the DM is very important, to tell them what you'd like to see from your group and talking with your fellow players. I myself, like Kat, I love a roleplay heavy group. I want emotion. I want feeling. I want a story. I don't want, I roll a d12, oh, I hit him, oh shit, a con save again. I don't want that. I want a story. But that's another thing too. Don't forget there are other games. If swords and sorcery aren't your thing, there's Star Wars from any number of different publishers. There's Star Trek from Modiphius Publishing. There's Call of Cthulhu. There's so many different... If D&D isn't your jam, something out there is. There's Shadowrun, which is like Dungeons & Dragons, but with guns. And cyberpunk shit all mixed into it. Or you like robots, there's Battletech. There's so many options out there. Give role-playing a shot. If you find a genre of fiction or whatever that you like, there's probably a role-playing game for it. Otherwise, there's games that just have, here's the rules, you create the world, like systems like Fate, GURPS, the Powered by the Apocalypse engine, stuff like that. There is so much out there. Literally, the sky is the limit.
Okay. And before we wrap things up, I want to go back to a thread that we previous episode. Mike, would you mind calling up that Critical Role Kickstarter and giving us the total that it's sitting at right now?
I don't have a keyboard in front of me. Can somebody else do that?
All right. Kat, can you call that up?
It was some ridiculously high number, too. I'm not saying their funding going to Mars anytime soon, but it was not unreasonable.
It officially ended at $11,385,449 U.S. dollars.
Damn.
88,887 backers.
Holy shit.
I think that's the most impressive Kickstarter in history, isn't it?
Maybe not in history, but it certainly like killed any records and any chance of anybody breaking records for film and television.
It's definitely a contender for the title. So, okay, all right. So, I guess that's pretty much wraps up our discussion on Dungeons & Dragons. And, so I guess one kind of random question I want to throw out to you, our listeners, is what would be your thoughts if we ran a game here on the show? Would that be something you'd be interested in listening to? So go ahead and sound off in the comments or in the email. Just kind of a random question to see, if you might be interested in having these guys run me through a Dungeons & Dragons game and... in finally drawing me into the fold, because I think I'm the only person here who hasn't actually played actual Dungeons & Dragons. So, sound off and let us know what you think of that idea. And with that, that is all the time that we have for Nerd of the Third Power this week. This is our final episode of this rotation, so we're going to be taking next week off to plan off our next set of shows. So we will be back in 2 weeks with more nerdy awesomeness for you. So we will see you then. Thank you as always for tuning in. I'm Dr. Gonzo.
I'm the Cat.
I'm Skyblaze.
I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd!
We will see you guys in 2 weeks. Taka, play us out.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi! So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
The internet can be your window to the world, or an open door that lets cyber criminals in. Online theft, webcam spying, and identity fraud are all on the rise. But you can stay safe with Kaspersky Lab, the world's most awarded internet security. Kaspersky protects your money, privacy, identity, and data with technology perfected over 20 years. So keep exploring. Kaspersky Lab will keep you safe online. Learn more at Kaspersky.com.